those old big matches. Those like I it's funny because like we didn't appreciate him back then. We hated it because he was always on top. But now looking back, now we have a full body of work to look back on. And he was doing stuff that maybe we didn't appreciate. And certainly the large group of fans didn't appreciate. I mean, I know you and I started really appreciating him in around 12, 13.
Yeah. His problem, I think it took him a while. Like, it took him a while to get it. You know, like, he wasn't great right away.
No.
Like, when he won the belt the first time, he wasn't like a... His matches were not that awesome.
And the character work was not there yet.
See, I'd argue the character work was better there than it got later. I think when you get to like 2011 and you get these spurts, right? Like his character work in the Money in the Bank 2011 is amazing, right?
It is. Yeah.
But look at the rest of the year and it's that's not the same character you're getting.
No, and probably because the writing was so bad.
Yeah. And he is the worst example, especially in 2012, of the telling us stuff instead of showing us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because like remember that was like the worst year of his life when he main evented every pay-per-view?
Yeah.
Like imagine that if that's the worst year of your life, like there's no way anybody's ever going to cheer for you. How are you relatable?
Yeah.
I've had success on every single level. I lost a couple matches, but you know, I'm a complete success. Worst year of my life.
See, what I loved about this character work is that like it hints on yeah, he's the face of the PG era.
Yeah.
But he's also tradition.
Yeah, tell me about it again as though like the thing wasn't recording and then I started it like 2 minutes ago.
Oh, really? I thought you started. That's why I began with it.
Yeah, so did I.
Oh, okay. All right, so start it over?
Just proceed as though this is going really well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I just love that, like, in the Money in the Bank 2011, he's – it's a whole other side of him where it's like, oh, no. Yeah, he's Mr. Hip-Hop guy this whole time. Yeah, he's been Mr. Flash, you know, this whole time. But he's, like, hardcore traditionalist in a lot of ways. And it shows up in the way that he wrestles and the way that they're selling it. He represents the WWE Championship. And they start talking about all the old champions. And so he's, like, representing tradition. And he fits that mold.
Yeah, and tradition sucks in Punk's eyes.
Yeah.
Do you remember one of the go-home promos that Punk talked to him about? Because he calls them the New York Yankees.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, like
okay, he's playing that. He's definitely playing that.
Yeah, it's one of the things he says to him. He says like you've become like because he kind of takes him through his story where he's like you started as this like anti-authority kind of character, but you've become the thing you hate the most.
Oh yeah, yeah, okay.
And it's so true.
It is true.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was go on.
Okay, no, just be, like where it's clear that they're highlighting that like, yeah, you're Vince's guy.
Right.
And you're not his goon, but you're his guy.
Yeah, and you've been his guy forever and the company sucks as a consequence.
Yeah.
Even though I like you and I respect you personally. Right. That's the story, and that's such a weird nuanced story.
Well, it was the last great story they told.
It is.
Well, last great story, not last good story. Last great story they told.
Is it the last good story?
No. They've had other stuff where it was like, oh, this is good. I'm sure.
A good story, though? I think they've had good matches. What would be a good story they've told?
I don't know, because we're talking, this is now a decade ago.
I know.
Isn't that crazy?
I know. Well, because I don't know if they've had a feud in a decade. Like a feud, not a series of matches, a feud.
Oh, yeah, where two people just really
hate each other.
Yeah.
And it's
because so great last story they told was the Daniel Bryan story.
But I don't think that's a great story. I think that's a great moment, but I think the story's terrible.
Go on.
Well, because it's a story in which the protagonist cannot actually overcome what the problem of the story is.
Because they say in their eyes he's a B-plus player.
Exactly. Like, that's not – how can the – because let's say he wins the title, right? He wins the title at WrestleMania. He beats everybody at WrestleMania like he did. That doesn't change because they weren't talking about his talent or his ability to wrestle, which is what they should have been talking about. They were talking about his marketability and his look. That doesn't, he can't change that. He can't actually vanquish that.
And well, so, if he has a, if he maybe he starts a Patreon.
He could start a, but not allowed anymore. They can't have social media.
You can't have OnlyFans.
No, you, well, maybe you can. I don't know if that one's one of the banned ones.
Zelina, that's what she got, Zelina Vegas, what she specifically got fired for.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was the OnlyFans. So but I mean, yeah, obviously Twitch, you know, obviously.
Well, she was making her money on Twitch, like.
Yeah, everybody was.
Imagine being a billion-dollar company and that's the kind of shit that bothers you.
Yeah, I can kind of understand it, though, because it's not their property. Like, that character is – that's why they go to the lengths of making weird names like Tyler Freezer, you know, in NXT so that you right. can't do things like that. So it's
– So you can't within be
the
person.
Within the insanity of what they're doing, it makes sense.
Right. I know it makes sense. It's just so –
Because what's Zelina Vega's – what's Zelina Vega's name?
Thea Trinidad, or at least that was her wrestling name.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay. What, do you know her birth name?
I'm going to look it up.
Well, there you go. No, that's it. That's the whole thing. Yeah, that's the whole.
I think it actually is. Yeah, it is Thea. Her real name is Thea Trinidad.
Wow, that's an interesting name anyway.
But it's a way better name than Zelina Vega.
Is it, that's not – well, the half part – the last half is Street Fighter, right?
Right. No, Vega, yeah.
Vega, yeah. And Street Fighter because it does – yeah. And Zelina, I don't know.
Well, because it's always a combination of two stupid things.
Yeah.
The worst one is Apollo Crews.
It's Terry Crews and Apollo from...
Apollo Creed.
Yeah, Apollo Creed. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's very B-grade.
Yeah.
But getting back to this story, I don't know. Like, there's a lot of... We'll never see John Cena tell a good story again in that way. Where you have a wrestling match, which is a great story within a wrestling match, because he's, you know, he's old now and mm-hmm. he's not physically there anymore, and you know, maybe they'll give him you know, a big marquee match.
He'll let him do whatever he wants.
Yeah, but physically he's not where he physically in this match. Wow, looking back at him, like, look at that guy, man. Wow, he just looks incredible.
Yeah,
and he moves fantastic. Yeah, I don't like the way he applies a bunch of his moves. I don't. But
the STF, man, the STF is the worst.
It's awful. It's awful.
Because it looks like there's no, it looks like there's no pressure.
There is no pressure. He's leaning on his palms. He's not pulling up at all.
Yeah.
And CM Punk has to do everything he can to sell that move in the, you know, let alone everybody other, every other wrestler.
Yeah. There's
when Cena pulls Punk back, by the way, because I'm watching with two sets of eyes, by the way, in the Money in the Bank 11 match. Just getting back to that for a second, because mm-hmm. I remember you telling me about that moment where he pulls him back to the middle of the ring.
Yeah.
And I'm watching it like as if I'm seeing it the first time. I'm like, oh, yeah, I think that's it at this point.
Yeah.
Great tease finish.
Oh, yeah. Whoever put that match together, and I'm going to probably go out on a limb and say it was Punk and Cena maybe, but whoever.
No, didn't Cena admit to saying that Punk like called a lot of that match?
Oh yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, maybe I heard that. Yep. Yeah, so yeah, the match is so well constructed. The twists, the turns. I get that you don't like the bullshit ending, right?
Yeah, just because.
Yeah. I get it.
I know they're telling a story, and WWE, like, you know, we love WWE. We're wrestling fans, and we want a good story on top of that. This was like – this was both. We're watching NJPW. Most of the match is told in the ring. WWE, you know, at worst, the match is secondary and junk, and it's all story. And at the best, you're going to have the mold of the two. And here is the mold of the two. And at the end, you know, they're telling the story going forward. And so they sacrifice the flow of the match to tell that story. I get it.
I find with Cena, there's something really interesting that like that seems to run contrary to every single other top guy. So when I look at my pay-per-view, like after watching all the pay-per-views, right? No one has more 4-star matches than John Cena.
Mm-hmm.
No one, like not even Shawn Michaels. No one. Right.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like just on pay-per-view, I have him with 36 4-star matches and 5 5-stars.
That's surprising.
Yeah.
Probably to most people, that's very surprising.
Michaels has, for me, 4 5-stars and 29 4-stars. Right? So the in-ring work is clearly there. But I think he has he's the inverse of every big star. And when I'm a big star, I mean Hogan, Austin, Rock, in that it's his character work that's the problem. Everybody else had this incredible character work, and some of them pulled out great matches, but it wasn't what drew you to it. And Cena, whose whole character at the beginning was he can't wrestle, has probably the best in-ring resume of almost all of them.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because who do I feel like I'm watching when I watch him? It's like, because you and I, we're the males. We're the Cena sucks crowd, if right. You have to put us on one side. We're not the kids and the women yelling, let's go Cena. So we're the Cena sucks side, but we're not, you know, we're not the marks like that. But, you know, we're more about, you know, on a polarity, we're more on that side. So he's fighting that uphill battle against us.
Yeah.
And that's what I find interesting. And I have to say, I have to give Cena credit and I have to give Vince McMahon credit because there is an acknowledgement of that fight.
Sure.
That he is fighting for that respectability. And I think that's what we loved about the ECW match with Van Damme.
Mm-hmm.
And we love that with this match. But there is – they know. They're playing on the idea that they're not aware of what we don't like. But they're very aware of what we don't like. They're just not going to give it to us and piss us off more and more and more and more and more so that when they do give it to us, they really did deliver. I think this is that example of once in a while they're like – they threw us a bone of like, we know and here it is.
Yeah, I question the business strategy of that because
they made a ton of money.
Yeah, but I don't know if they made it's always the money they left on the table, right? There's been a pretty consistent decline in viewership since 2002, right? And you got to place a lot of that on them stubbornly pushing Cena. Despite the fact that, because as much as you say we're the men who are cheering Cena, it's not just that we're the men. We're the fan base. We're the old fans who didn't always like the presentation of the character, and the not listening to that has, for lack of a better word, poisoned the well. That's why Reigns failed as a babyface, among a few other things too. But like, if Reigns' push happens in a world where Cena just hasn't spent 10 years. Or not Cena, but the WWE hasn't spent 10 years forcing Cena on us. It's probably a very different situation.
Yeah, I think what they're doing, if I have to play devil's advocate, is that they know they've got you and me. And they know that – and remember, in that time, there's really – NJPW hasn't made it to the forefront. There's no AEW.
Yeah.
Impact Wrestling is a joke. There's really no competition at this point. ROH is like, you got to be uber nerd. So I think, like, if I had to play devil's advocate, is that they know they've got you and me. They know they've got the fan base. And mm-hmm. So they're using that to move outwards and branch outwards and using Cena as that.
I guess. It makes sense. But, the reason why they make a lot of money now has nothing to do with their in-ring product.
Zero.
Right?
Zero.
And whereas the reason they used to make money was because of that. They make money now because they're good at – they have so much content,
live content,
yeah, live and archival content,
yeah,
and so that makes them a ton of money, right? Yep.
They got really lucky with the live is the major source now, and they just got lucky because of the internet and television needs live content, and that's why they're just throwing money at them, even though they're getting what are the 1.9 ratings for Raw, is that what it is?
Yeah.
1.8. Are they even cracking 2? I don't even know the last time I looked, but they just got lucky that the Netflix and the Amazon Primes and all that kind of thing. And yeah, but the leaving money on the table thing is, I think that's kind of what we wanted to discuss today in terms of like the invasion.
Yeah, that was amazing. Was that the first like really big gaffe you can remember?
That I, in my lifetime, yeah.
But it kind of starts like, I know WWF existed before, but WWF isn't our lifetime thing, kind of.
I think, you can make the argument, apparently they wanted to do Hogan and Tyson in 1990.
Okay.
And I think that would have been great. I don't know why it didn't come together.
Tyson lost.
He lost, but he's still the name. He's still the, you know, just because Hulk Hogan lost the title doesn't mean he wasn't still Hulk Hogan.
How fast did the rape allegations come out?
I don't know if they were that year. They might have been around that time, but that's why I'm saying I wasn't aware of, you know, I was a 10-year-old kid, so.
He was arrested in 91.
Okay, so no, they still had time. They left money on the table, I think. But I think the invasion, and people are always saying online, you know, oh, we don't want to hear any more rebookings of the invasion. And guess what? I agree, and it kind of hit me over the head recently, and I don't remember why it did. But the way to rebook the invasion is not to book an invasion.
Right.
And what I mean by this is, and that's the one offer that's never been discussed, is that we have, I think what was so cool when Vince McMahon, and when they announced that Vince McMahon bought WCW, in my mind at the time, it was, okay, so we are flooded with images in our minds of potential matches that we've never seen before. And that's what's permeating the spring in my mind. And we're getting a WWF product that is not even close to that at that point, because WCW hasn't even started. We're getting Austin as a heel against Rikishi, who's now a face again for some reason.
Even though we tried to kill him with a car.
Yeah, and now we're supposed to cheer for him again and view him as a threat for a title. And we have this moment of Triple H getting wildly cheered the night after WrestleMania, who's confronting Austin in the ring. We have the night before, the first time Austin and Vince McMahon are crashing beers cans together. We have in our mind, at the close of WrestleMania 17, we have these three images, all these dream matches that we can have going forward. Austin and McMahon together. And then at the end of the next night, Triple H being wildly cheered as he chases Austin in the ring in Texas. I mean, when you talk about leaving money on the table, look at those three things that we were like, this is it. This is going to be the new – we thought we were in a golden era going here. It's astronomical, the potential for what we could get going forward.
Right.
And we don't get any of that.
No. And despite,
we don't even get
– despite all that, 2001 is actually a really good year, but
– wrestling-wise.
Yeah.
But, I mean, compared to what it could have been, it's like a 3 on 10. Because wrestling-wise, it may be one of their best years.
Yeah, it's up there.
It's up there. But it's always in our minds as fans watching. We're like, we can have Goldberg and Austin. We can have Undertaker and Sting. All these things are brewing. And it centers around the purchase of WCW. And what do? Of course, they drop the ball. And I don't want to rebook, you know, how they should have done that. I think there were major issues at the time that could have been solved with a little bit more patience. You don't have to book an invasion. You have hours of TV. Yeah, they couldn't get Vince, you know, can't get a, you know, Turner channels to put on WCW. And they'll always say in retrospect, it's a failed brand. Okay, it's a failed brand. Instead of the word invasion, use the word restoration. Give me Nitro from 1995 again. Give me that and put it on Sunday Night Heat. Oh, we can't call it Sunday Nitro. Okay, just put Nitro on Sunday Night Heat. Every Sunday night, give me those 3 hour long match, you know, the hour, give me the 3 hours in there with your ragtag crew that you've signed, with your Chuck Palumbos and your Stasiaks, because I'm watching that. You watch that and you're like, well, any minute the big stars are going to show up, and gradually they will. Booker T is going to start. DDP is going to start. You don't have any interaction with WWF. Don't have any interaction until you're going to load that thing up.
Yeah, because within 2 years, they have almost everybody they need.
Exactly. Exactly. So reset it. And then build to that in 2 years.
Yeah. It's a strange thing. Do you think it's because they just wanted to beat it again?
Yeah. It's like what? It's like, so it's like, here's the thing. They set it up so they had to beat it. Okay. But we know Vince owns both in real life.
Right.
So why is there an invasion? You've already announced to me on March 26, 2001 that you've bought WCW. Yes, I've bought my competition. But then right away, Shane's like, no, I did. It's like, no, I don't need that. I don't want a McMahon family feud. That's what it turned into.
Or if Shane is going to do it, you could say like, oh, no, I bought it and it's time for me to branch out and do my own thing. I think
yes,
you can sow the seeds of a future invasion by doing that.
And you know how you do that in my mind is he announces it on March 26th, mm-hmm. whatever, and McMahon freaks out and then Shane beats him. Okay? And then after that there's some sort of not a reconciliation, but you know, like a you do your thing, I'll do my thing, you know, whatever. That's mm-hmm. it. That's it. That's all you need. And then, yeah, Sunday Night Heat is going to look weird, but
no one watches really... Sunday Night Heat anyway.
Nobody does. But guess what? People will when they're like, hey, you're going to see the Nitro set.
Right.
The music from, you know, 90... Wow! That. That's what you're going to see. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, especially because those... The viewers that left wrestling when they lost Nitro never came back.
I think that's the biggest part of my argument right there.
Yeah.
Because they never came back because they didn't want to watch WWE.
Yeah.
They wanted to watch WCW. And in fact, they didn't even want to watch WCW the way it was the last couple of years.
No.
They wanted to watch WCW the way it was at the latest, 96, 97, 98, at the latest.
So give
them that.
Yeah. Like, look, I've been chronologically watching through WCW.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
from what years?
I started in 83.
Okay.
And I'm watching the pay-per-views and all the Clash of the Champions, right?
Okay.
It's taken me a long time. But I'm at 1990, right? Recently this week, we heard that, like, the archival footage might not be moving over to Peacock when the network moves.
Okay. So what does that mean?
It means you won't have all the past pay-per-views and everything anymore.
At all?
Yeah, that's the rumor. It's a rumor, so take it for what it will.
Yeah, I had considered that as a possibility, yeah. But I didn't know that actually made it out as a rumor.
Yeah, it was a rumor. So what I did was there's one WCW pay-per-view that it's the one I don't have in hard copy somewhere. Because, you know, I got that giant collection, right?
Yeah.
The one I don't have in hard copy somewhere is Starrcade 1994.
Ah,
okay. So I threw on... So I was watching, I'm at the RoboCop pay-per-view, Capital Combat, 1990.
Oh, yes.
Great show, except for the RoboCop shit. But, so I went from that, and then I threw on Starrcade 94, and I cannot tell you what a culture shock that is. Because it's like you're going from like Lex Luger and Flair and Sting and Vader and Ron Simmons and the Road Warriors. And the first match on that show is Vader against Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and Duggan's the U.S. champion.
Right.
And that match is actually fine, but then you got Hogan and Beefcake in the main event. Like, every match...
Don't you have Honky Tonk on there, too?
He was supposed to be, and then he didn't. He was supposed to fight Johnny B. Bad, but right. Arn Anderson fought him instead. And that match is actually fine. You got Sting fighting Avalanche. So it's like, it really looks like a completely different product. And I wrote a couple of my buddies, and I said, this must have been such an incredible, like... People must have been so mad.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, okay, well, this is not the product I want anymore. So those are the viewers you're talking about. The ones that, like, who watched in, like, 1990 and slowly saw their promotion become the Hulk Hogan promotion.
Yeah.
And then I guess it got a bit better in 96, 97 when they're doing the NWO, when the Cruiserweights are doing their thing, the Horsemen are still there. Like
they're there for the cruiserweight. They love the cruiserweights, I'm sure. They love the Eddie Guerrero's and the Benoit's and stuff. That's fine.
And the Horsemen. We can't forget the Horsemen are always there.
Yeah.
Of course they're not going to keep watching. It's not their product anymore.
It's not their product anymore. No.
And they must have felt like they just got their product back. Because from like 94 to 96, it's the Hulk Hogan product.
Right.
It's what
the weak Hulk Hogan product.
Oh god, yeah. it's not good. Well, no. Look, I've only watched one show, but
well, Hogan as a face is just terrible.
Yeah, I mean, what a brilliant move to turn him heel.
Yeah, that was great. That's when you're like, okay, cool, we acknowledge what the fans are saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's it. So you address those fans. They're gonna want to watch because like the there was talent at the end with those young guys in WCW, the O'Hares and the Palumbos, you know, the cruiserweight, the guys, the 24 guys that they had under contract. I remember that. It was 24. They're fine.
Yeah.
Give me an hour of that. There's no risk on there. And then eventually DDP and Booker T are gonna join. You couldn't put Benoit and Jericho on there.
You could. You're gonna, or you couldn't.
You could. You could do that.
Yeah.
You know, you could say, you know, Shane has cut a deal with Benoit and Jericho to appear on Nitro, and it pisses off McMahon and Austin and Triple H even more.
Right.
So that, you know.
But there's nothing they can do about it. Yeah.
Right. You can do that. You can do that. And you're giving that, you know, and then eventually maybe Shivani would come once those Time Warner contracts end. And look, by November, how many guys are, you know.
If you just get Ric Flair, it's still better.
Yeah.
And you get Ric Flair the day after this invasion ends.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost embarrassing to see, you know, how it played out.
And then 2 months later, who do you get?
Yeah, exactly. You get the entire NWO.
And then 4 months after that, you get another major piece.
Are you referring to Mysterio?
No, Bischoff.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Like, I mean, Mysterio, sure. Yeah, I mean, that'd be a good piece.
Because at that point, you can have Bischoff appear in WCW, try to take it back from Shane.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very simple. And see, and now what you've got is you got that natural thing of, oh, who's coming next? See, the first 3 months, you build up DDP and Booker T, and they're coming back. And then you go through the summer, and then you say, oh, Flair's coming back. In how long? You know what I mean? Like, you have something to look forward to with each of these people coming back.
Yeah.
You just don't book it as an invasion. It was just, it's just book it as you're an empire with different provinces now.
Yeah. And if you want, you can kind of like pepper in some things. Like, you can have Booker T show up one night and beat somebody up, but then have ramifications for it.
Yeah.
Don't start an all out war. Oh, this guy's just trying to make a name for himself. He's actually maybe before he shows up on the Sunday night show.
Yeah.
Then you have to tune in there to see what the ramifications of that are.
It just makes sense. It's just because it's more powerful in my mind that you have it as an empire with provinces as opposed to one company clearly trying to beat up on the image of an older company that's done.
Yeah, and full of guys that don't represent that image.
Never did. And also the new logo. That I remember that the red one.
Yeah.
Was that red? I didn't recognize that.
No.
Give me that steel block one, that, you know, the one from Nitro.
Do you think that DDP and Booker T are good enough representatives of WCW?
No.
No, right?
Not on their own talent. It was just that they only got their place in the latter years when everybody else was done.
Yeah. I think one of the big failures of it, too, is that they were never able to secure Sting.
Yeah.
I think Sting and Lex Luger needed to be involved.
And you know, that was on Vince with the Lex Luger thing.
But it's so stupid. I actually never understood why. I really wish they would have brought in Luger in like 2002, 2003 as like Eric Bischoff's bodyguard. Even if you're not going to have him wrestle.
Yeah, that would have been very cool.
Like just this fucking jacked up Lex Luger. because Luger, if you watch WCW from the beginning, I mean, Luger's the man. Like, I think we forget how great Lex Luger is because his WWF run isn't good.
Yeah.
Like his early stuff, like 89 to 90, like almost every pay-per-view match he's in is a 4-star match at least.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He's awesome. Like he's got great stuff with Pillman. He's got these great matches with Flair. Like everything he does is really good and he's good. It's not like he's being carried. I know there's like the Scott Keith myth of like Lex Luger sucking and like him being carried to every match, but that's not the case when you rewatch the matches.
Hmm. Yeah, his tag match with the Steiners. Oh, this thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's not being – look, you could make a case he might be the worst worker in that match.
Right.
But he's not being carried.
Right.
And up to this point in where I'm at in WCW in the mid-90s, he's – like I'd much rather watch him than Sting.
And he's also the – you know, in the early Nitro years, he's the most interesting character on the entire show.
Well, yeah, because he's such a douche.
Like. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was too bad. It was the NWO storyline that superseded him. But yeah, it wasn't because it's cool because like at that point when the NWO comes in, they're not going to come in for a Sunday night. show.
No.
They're not.
I also started thinking that, like, the NWO should probably never have been part of the invasion. Like, as much as, like, yes, we want to consider them WCW, it's almost like they should have been, like, a third faction.
Yeah, because they hated WCW. That was the whole need for the NWO. Yeah, like they should never go to WCW.
No. Like, it's almost like it's a consequence of, like, you finally invading.
Well, it's like they're the cancer, right? That's how they're saying it. They're the cancer, so they come to WWF.
Yeah.
So, there you go. It writes itself. There's the continuity right there.
Yeah, and really, it probably should have just morphed into the Click.
Yeah, that would have been very cool.
Because you're not going to keep – whatever – 2002 Hogan was going to happen no matter what.
Yeah.
You're not going to keep him heel. So, like, you know, after you do that match with The Rock, like, you break him off and you get Triple H in there. You get Shawn Michaels in there. You get X-Pac in there. And there's your NWO. And that's the real NWO.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Like, they're the ones doing hand signals between cameras in the 90s.
Yeah, right? that in 96 especially, yeah.
Yeah, like, and so finally you actually have the real thing together.
By the way, I think I figured out what was supposed to happen with Hogan and Austin.
Okay, go on.
By the way, so we know that because Hogan loses, he's okay with losing.
Yes.
He was going to lose.
Yes.
And so I think the idea pitched sees Hogan losing to Austin. I think that's the issue. I think it came down to who's going to be cheered. And I think that's where the disagreement was.
But everything I've ever heard, and you think Austin balked at it.
Yeah.
See, that would have been the interesting one because there's a history of the crowd turning on The Rock.
Yep.
There's not a history of the crowd turning on Austin.
Exactly.
And I don't know if they turn as much on Austin as they do on The Rock.
I don't think they do. And I think that they're like, okay, obviously Hogan's coming in. He's getting cheered like crazy. They're going to have to do something, you know, with that. They want to have a big WrestleMania moment with Hogan coming back. Well, Austin's not going to step aside and let that happen on his dime. And I think that's where the crux was. Because Austin is paranoid at that point in his mental whatever. And he doesn't want to lose his spot.
Yeah.
So he's like, oh, I turn heel on Hogan, then what happens to me?
Yeah. Especially after the failed heel run from the year before.
Yeah, exactly. It's like now that has to go back. Yeah, I think that's what it was.
That makes sense. I mean, you could have done a longer-term plan with Austin and Hogan, but ultimately I think the Rock match was the way to go.
It was the way to go. It was. Ultimately, it was a better match. Rock is more fluid in the sense that, like, he can – you know, he can play both roles more easily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're also, in theory, it becomes more of a passing of the torch moment. Because I think it's easy to forget that Rock was still pretty early in his career. I know it's the end. I know it's the end of his career, right? But, like,
yeah.
What's he, 5 years in? 6 years in?
Maybe.
That's, to me, the biggest what if in wrestling. Is if...
Yeah, if he never goes to Hollywood?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He goes down as the greatest wrestler of all time, right?
If he doesn't or if he does?
If he doesn't.
Well, I mean, it's just he got so much better every time he came back.
The Rock?
Character-wise.
Yeah, the Hollywood Rock character is good. But, like, when you rewatch his 2000 performance, like, mm-hmm. He is so good.
Yeah, 01.
Yeah, every little thing he does is amazing. Like... He's really special.
Yeah. What a rough year 2002 was for Vince, though. He loses Austin and The Rock. And then a couple months later, Hogan walks out.
Yeah. Look, you leave the Attitude Era with four big wrestlers. Or you're like in 2000 or 1999 and 2000, the ones that really brought you to the dance, right? And made you like the popular public company that you are, right? You have Austin, Rock, Foley and Triple H.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are kind of the big four of that era.
Yeah.
By 03, three of them are gone. And the worst one remains.
And he's not what he was at that point.
No, because he's too bloated and big and like.
Yeah. And he had suffered his first major injury and he was never the same since he came back.
No. And he's not the same type of wrestler as the other. Like, he's not the company carrying type of wrestler.
No.
I think Triple H in 2000 is like, he's like maybe one of the most valuable wrestlers to have on your roster, but it doesn't work if you don't have Rock carrying the company.
Yeah, it's kind of like that Cena Punk thing that we're saying. It's like Cena was your anchor and Punk is driving the story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is interesting because the Triple H thing with the invasion, I never saw like a game, a role for him within that. I know the revisionist history is like, oh, the DX tank that rolled up and blah, 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 blah. Completely revisionist because I did go through all the Raws from mid 97 up until after WrestleMania 14. And he has a huge role after WrestleMania 14 and up towards WrestleMania 14, but it really intensifies after WrestleMania 14.
Yes.
But I mean, all the groundwork was already done. It was finished by Austin and McMahon.
Well, he's a lackey until WrestleMania 14.
Yeah, and his character really changes the night after. And he comes into his own.
Yeah, yeah, he's good in 98.
Yeah.
He's a good character in 98. Like, him being a good character finishes in 2000. I think the death, like, where we start to see the chinks in the armor is the feud with Kurt Angle.
The chinks? Because I thought he was great in that feud.
I don't, because I think he was great, but then it gets quashed, and then that's the chink, is that he's afraid to show vulnerability.
Oh, right, okay.
And then that becomes the defining characteristic of the rest of his run.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, because Survivor Series 2000, when he faces Austin, it's like, this is flat.
Yeah.
It was flat.
I was thinking about that today because I was actually recording a podcast about 2000. And, like, that match just doesn't fit in the era at all.
Yeah, I don't remember it at all.
Well, it's because by the time Austin comes back – see, I think when Austin comes back in 2000, he doesn't fit in the promotion anymore. There's no place for him because it's become a wrestling promotion. An athletic wrestling promotion with Rock on top and Rock's fighting Benoit and Kurt Angle. Like, it's a wrestling promotion. And now Austin's just a fighter, this weird brawler with these chaotic things. But that's all now relegated to the hardcore division. Right?
Yeah, I had always felt that there was something off with Austin when he came back.
Yeah. Now he
catches, and that's a good reason. That's a good explanation.
He catches up. Because by 2001, by the beginning of 2001, I feel he's right back in. It's fine, you know?
Yeah.
But that 3-month stretch where he comes back in late 2000, he just doesn't fit. And so that match with Triple H as a consequence is like, what is this?
Right.
It's so stupid. Like, he's killing him with a car lift. And
I'm not even talking about that because that was maybe the dumbest thing that I had seen. He murders him and then Triple H is back 8 days later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's fine.
But yeah. And that's the whole thing with the Triple H thing is that, like, with the invasion, it's like, and, you know, Triple H was, you know, injured, so we never saw what was going to happen. But I wonder what – I mean, I don't even wonder, but it's like it would have been embarrassing how much how many squashes – I mean, we did see it with, like, Steiner, Booker T, and Nash, and, you know, all the other WCW guys that came through.
Sting.
Yeah. Yeah, it would have been embarrassing.
Yeah, he would have been the number one face of the WWF. Right? In the invasion.
He would have. Yes, he was.
We wouldn't have gotten Kurt Angle as the number one face.
No. And look, if you just go with the night after WrestleMania and then he chases Austin into SummerSlam as the face, wonderful. Great.
Yeah.
That's a good feud to tell. He's the guy at the top. Austin is the guy who's not what he was.
Yeah. He beat Austin at the No Way Out.
Perfect. It's written.
Nope.
You know,
make them a team.
No, make them a team. It was just stupid. It was stupid. And have that be separate from the WCW stuff.
Or like you said, don't do the WCW stuff.
Well, that's what. Yeah, exactly. Or just keep it on that show and then, you know, eventually work its way in.
Yeah. I wonder, the Rush must have just been about punishing them.
The Rush, I think, was just it was a couple of factors, which was we need to capitalize on the interest of the fact that we just bought it. We can't get a TV deal and we can't sign anybody that's of interest. So we might as well just suck the juice out of it, whatever way we can. And that's just beating up on nobodies. And they just didn't have to do that.
No.
All they had to do is take a minute and breathe and say, okay, maybe it is nothing. and maybe we don't have to suck it out, and it's nothing. Let's put it on Sunday Night Heat and make people like let's restart the brand.
Instead, their arrogance was like, it'll be fine if we put our people in it.
Their thing was, we've built these brands, wrestlers, but you know, they see them as brands.
Yeah.
And they're more valuable than that brand because we built them. So yeah, the value will come in with the interaction with our brand. But they don't realize that no. Those brands over there are also valuable, also, even though they didn't build them up. And so they just killed it. They could have made their brand even more strong by doing that. But it's like, yeah, I totally felt that with, oh yeah, no, you're gonna get one of our WWF guys who's gonna be the spokesperson for that company.
Yeah, the guy whose entire career is based on getting fired by your company, by FedEx.
Yeah.
He's gonna be the top spokesman for your company.
Yeah.
It's insane. Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah, it really was. And it's like, well, does this authority structure work where these guys are just allowed into the show? Because the promotion is more than just the wrestlers, and it's more than just the potential of the matches. It's the vibe of the show. It's the feel of the show. It's the way they shoot the cameras. And Nitro was a different feel than Raw.
Of course. And,
you know, like, that's what people also like about the thing. You know, when they switched over in WCW towards the end, they had that giant, you know, fake Titantron and whatever it was at the end, it just didn't look good. It didn't feel right. It felt like a really crappy promotion. But that whole beginning where they go to commercial and then they'd crane the camera over the crowd while the music was playing, that's its own thing. That was kind of cool. It was different. It was its own feel. And you have the broadcasters that are sitting away from the ring and they're facing the camera, you know, and you see the ring in the background. That's a different feel. Bring that back. That's what drew people to it. Not only, but it's part of the feel of it.
Bring back the familiar announcers.
Bring back – that's – you need Shivani back. You need Mean Gene and Bobby and all that. So bring them back.
Yeah. And if you can't, I'm sure you could have at least gotten Mike Tenay.
Definitely could have gotten Mike Tenay. He probably asked for a job and was turned down, I'm sure.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I from everything I understand about Shivani is that he just was done. Like, he didn't want to do it anymore, right?
It's fine. I respect that. I don't blame him. I mean, all the crap that he went through.
Which is a shame because, like, he's clearly still very good.
Yeah. Yeah, he's having fun.
Yeah. Have you seen his videos where he shows up with Tony Khan at Impact?
No, but I've heard about them.
They're great. They're really great. Are they? Yeah, because it's like, it's funny because all the WWF super fans shit on them. They're like, Tony Khan's. But they must really hate when Vince showed up in Memphis because that's the feel.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah. Like, it's like, they'll cut away on Impact and it'll be Tony Khan and Tony Schiavone, and they'll be like, okay, well, this is a paid ad and, you know, I wanted to throw them some money because I know they're having trouble. And anyway, tomorrow night on Dynamite, I mean, and then he's like subtly shitting on their product, but also promoting it.
Oh, that's great.
It was great. What did Tony say? He's like, he said something along the lines of like, the Golden Globes are sold out, but welcome to the Tonys. Cause it's him and Tony Khan.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're fun. Like it feels fun. And, you know, you can see that pettiness still existing today where the WWE needs to shit on the brands. Look no further than scheduling NXT opposite Dynamite.
Yeah.
Like, you're hurting your own show to do what? Like, to make sure – to hurt the other show? Like, why wouldn't you put NXT, which up until that point, I don't really like it so much anymore, but up until that point was your best product.
Well, and that's the whole thing. You don't like it very much anymore.
Yeah.
And that's what they're doing. Like, we didn't like WCW by the end. It was like, all right, just get rid of this. Yeah. That's what it was. That's what they did, because they have to always beat something in the fake world.
Yeah, but this is the real world. Whereas,
it's a real world. Just like, have your own kingdom doing its own thing.
Well, yeah. And it's like, if AEW puts a show on a Wednesday, put your show on a Tuesday and more people will watch your show.
Like, I didn't even know that Rhea Ripley wasn't part of the main roster when she was in the Royal Rumble. Cause I don't watch NXT anymore. I don't care.
No. Cause it's just another show.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing, is because, you know, it's the same guy signing off on everything and making all the decisions, it always has to have that same uniform feel.
Right.
And it doesn't necessarily have to. That's what makes you stronger. It's like when you have like diverse promotions, diverse brands, and they're united, but behind the scenes, then that's more strong than if everything has to be the same thing. And you're pushing the same product with different color, with yellow on Wednesday and blue on Friday and red on Monday.
Yeah.
I always thought, like, when they did the brand split when I was younger, I always thought it would be kind of cool if they branded them as different shows, as in, and maybe they wouldn't say this on the brand, but they would market it as the biggest stars are on Raw and the best wrestling's on SmackDown.
Well, they did. I mean, they didn't market it, but that's what it was.
It is what it was.
Yeah, like
it was the SmackDown 6.
If you look at the year 2003, it's like two vastly different products.
Like, but they're telling this. Yeah, they are. And then they stopped it. They stopped it and they started having Brock like hog up all this mic time. And he's clearly uncomfortable doing it. And then I remember 2003, because 2002, you have the SmackDown 6. But 2003, like you're going into like Survivor Series. Remember, it's like Matt Morgan and A-Train and Brock Lesnar. I'm like, I'm watching this show for the wrestling.
I wonder if that was a consequence of it not doing as well in the ratings.
Is that what happened?
I'm guessing, because did it ever draw ratings like Raw did? No, right?
I don't know, but I'm going to assume no. But also that's, yeah, there are different factors for those things, I think. I think there are different factors. I think the expectations are also going to be lower just because it's not a Monday night. And so it's okay that it doesn't, and that's factored into the price that they get paid by the network. Right. So like a 2.5 back then is equivalent to a 3.2 on a Monday, right, as an example. Yeah. And that's why I think that, like, you know, that's not how it started. Because remember, it started Hogan and The Rock went to SmackDown. So I could be entirely wrong.
Right.
Hogan was there. The Rock was there. Wasn't Triple H there in the beginning?
No, he was bouncing between the two.
Right.
Because he was involved in the title feud.
Yeah, because I always felt Raw was the smaller brand when it first started. It was just like Austin and Undertaker on Raw, and then I felt like SmackDown was really front-loaded.
Yeah, see, Austin wasn't on Raw to begin with either. He wasn't drafted anyway.
Right. I meant like by the end of April, yeah, beginning of May.
I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. He's wrestling The Undertaker, and he's wrestling Booker T, and I'm like, this is not as good as SmackDown.
Well, no, because all the guys that are interesting and hot in 2002 were on SmackDown.
Correct. Right. Yeah. Yeah, you basically have RVDs like the major guy week to week. But I mean, just imagine like how much you could have had in 2002. In 2002, you have Eddie Guerrero coming back. You have RVD there. You have, you know, really ascending. Like, you could really have a great Nitro every Sunday night. It's a really good brand.
Put RVD there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could definitely. And then once you have those pieces in place and you want to do a proper invasion, do it and treat the invaders as actually something credible.
And you can even, it doesn't even have to be an invasion. It can literally be Shane and Vince going, let's see who's the better promotion.
Yeah.
And it's like a super card, you know, that then devolves into an invasion. You know what I mean? It's just like, we didn't have to have an invasion just because that's a way of telling a story. Fine. That's a way of telling a story. We just don't have to have it. You could have it, but it doesn't have to be the only way of telling that story.
No, and if you do it that way too, you end up showing the people who came over from the other company a little more respect than just burying them, right? Which might open the door to getting guys like Sting. That was always the issue, right? Is he was like, they're not going to treat me right if I go there.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
And then Goldberg would have had a better run, you
right.
know. I mean, that's an important loss, you know, that Goldberg run was really mishandled.
Yeah, well,
they have him feuding with Christian, but struggling to beat Christian.
Yeah, and Jericho.
Struggling to beat them.
Yeah.
I don't mind the Jericho as much because Jericho was already your first, you know, unified champion. But when he it takes him 6 minutes on Raw to beat Christian. And I'm like, a couple of years ago on Nitro, he would have ran over him in 35 seconds.
Yeah.
There's a big problem here.
Yeah. Goldberg is entirely right about everything he's ever said about that run.
Oh, what did he like?
Well, his whole thing is like they didn't know what to do with me. They didn't know how to treat the character properly. Like it's 1,000% right.
Yeah, everything they did. I mean, even when he would come out and the fireworks would come from the sides, and he's framed in that square on Raw. It's almost like this subtle kind of thing of like, yeah, we control Goldberg. Goldberg is no longer this big entity that's like unstoppable. It's like he's this tamed thing.
Why'd they change his music to a shittier music?
Change his music, change his tights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so weird that he keeps coming back.
See, now it's just obnoxious. Now I just don't – I'm just like, what is going on here?
And I love that people compare that to like Sting in AEW.
Are they?
Yeah, they're like, well, look, I mean, look at the AEW has Sting. Look at that. How can you say anything bad? But like, Sting's not.
I want AEW to have Sting. I want them to have. I want every company to have legends. Sure. I just don't want them fighting for the title
and winning the title. He was champion last year. Goldberg was Goldberg beat the Fiend last year. Now I hate the Fiend, but like
the Kevin Owens one was bad enough, let alone last year's.
Yeah.
That's why, like NJPW, they handle it the best. It's like, yeah, you get your legends on, they're in a 6-man tag, and they start the show.
Yeah. And like, but there's a difference though too. Their legends can still wrestle.
Yes.
Like you could have one of their big legends. I don't know. Name me anybody of their big legends. Come
Nagata.
In.
Nagata.
Yeah. He could, Yuji Nagata. He could fight Kota Ibushi and hold his own in a match.
Yeah.
They won't put him over him. Which is smart, but like,
yeah,
the match won't look like garbage. Goldberg can't even fucking lift people anymore.
No, although the McIntyre match was great, but you know, it's like, okay, but like it shouldn't be happening right now.
No, look, I love the Goldberg match at 33
with Lesnar.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what. Yeah. I mean. That's yeah. Perfect. Like,
but you don't need it for the title.
No, that was stupid. You know, that year, the title should have been between Owens and Jericho.
Absolutely. That's the story you're telling.
You've built that story on TV for what, like 6 months?
Well, since the time that Owens basically won it.
Yeah, which was 6 months earlier. And yeah. They were teaming at that at the pay-per-view the week before.
Yeah. Yeah, so it comes down to this, is that Vince is really just – he is – in trying to crush his – in the fake world, the brand crush. My brand will crush your brand. He's hurting his own brand.
Yeah. It's what CM Punk said. He's a millionaire who should be a billionaire. No, probably he's a billionaire now, but...
He's a billionaire who should be a trillionaire, but yeah. Yes.
But yeah. not off of his creative endeavors.
No, I mean, look, business-wise, he's a genius. He is a massive genius. I do think he got lucky with the live content thing.
Yeah.
I just think he got lucky with that. But he's a brilliant marketer. He's brilliant. He knows how to make money. He knows how to make a lot of money. He's very good at that. But like Bischoff had said in an interview, he goes, I don't think he's very strong creatively. And I 1,000% agree.
Yeah.
He's a P.T. Barnum. What he can do better than anybody is get people to go, hey, I want to see this thing once in a while. You know, he'll pull a magic, you know, pull a rabbit out of his hat once in a while, go, oh, what's this going to be about? Oh, this could be interesting.
Yeah, that's why WrestleMania 23 gets such a nice pop, even though the product around it was not necessarily the greatest.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, or the CM Punk thing, you know, they struck lightning. A broken clock can be right once in a while.
But then it's like, to me, the CM Punk thing is their last chance to build a bigger than the brand superstar.
Yeah, and they don't want to do that. They don't want to do. They know how to do it, and they won't.
Yeah,
I dare say they're one of the reasons I'm not happy with the Roman Reigns thing right now, because I think here's the thing that WWF doesn't do, and I'm saying WWF because it encompasses today and yesterday,
then which now is forever.
Until he dies. But yes, they don't build the monster heel. That's an NWA thing. They don't build the monster heel. They always have to become chicken shit for some reason. And Roman Reigns is now cheating to win. And I don't want to see that. I don't need to see that. I've seen it. And I'm seeing it with the Kevin Owens feud. He's struggling to win. I don't want to see him struggle to win. I want to see him bulldoze over everybody until he gets to The Rock.
Yeah. And even then, he should bulldoze The Rock.
Should. Then build me your big star that you're going to have over, you know, or during this time, build me your guy who's going to take him over. And then you build that guy and you have him win a couple months later.
Well, this is the problem right now that they're having. And I haven't – it became crystal clear from the Royal Rumble till now. is as much as I like Reigns as champion, and I like Drew as champion too. I thought he was doing a really good job as champion.
Yeah. Yeah, same here.
No challengers. There's no credible challengers on the show.
No.
Not one. Not one that you would be excited to see.
And yet, if I had told you, you know, a couple of years ago, hey, Daniel Bryan, Cesaro, and Nakamura could be potential challengers for a championship, you'd probably be excited.
Look, current WWE, right, is like – it's like your favorite sports team that drafted a bunch of amazing guys and didn't do anything with it, with them.
Yeah, yeah.
Like if you look at the fucking list of guys since 2015 – 2014 that have come in, how do you not build on it? You got Balor, Owens, Zayn, Nakamura, Andrade, Aleister Black, Ricochet, Matt Riddle, Keith Lee. Imagine being handed that level of prospect.
And you already have Bryan and Cesaro.
Yeah, you already have Bryan and Cesaro. But of these people, none of them are in a position that's interesting.
No.
Maybe Balor. Balor is NXT champion, but like.
Yeah, but that's because they didn't do anything with. That's an example. They didn't do anything with him on the main roster.
Yeah, and like it's not his fault. Seth Rollins injured him. Like your guy injured him.
Yeah.
This should have been the guy. I always believe Balor was a guy they should have built around.
Well, they put him over Reigns clean, I think, right? Was it clean?
Yes, it was clean, and then he beats Rollins clean.
Yeah.
So. They were doing it, and then they're like, oh, he's injury prone. But it's like, no, this guy's injured other people like this.
What, you mean the guy who did that to a 50-year-old guy and everybody else, that stupid powerbomb?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like there's no excuse for, like, them not having a hot challenger. They're all there. But they've all been – it's like they don't know what to do with anybody.
But that's the whole thing. And I think they do know. They don't want anyone leaving anymore. So that's what I'm saying is, like, if they strap a real rocket to Roman Reigns, because I think it looks to us today like they're strapping a rocket to Roman Reigns, but I think it's only because it's relative to all the other junk we've had to sit through.
Mm.
If they put a real rocket and booked him differently than they've ever booked him, I mean a non-Vince – like pretend Vince McMahon has passed away or he's no longer in the company and the whole idea of a strong baby face and chicken crap heels doesn't exist anymore – you can actually have a monster heel and you just build that. Eventually, I think their fear is that he'll go to Hollywood because he's a really good actor. Yeah. He's really good looking. He can leave too, just like The Rock did, just like Cena did.
Yeah, but,
or get too big for his britches like Austin.
But then again, that's just an extremely narrow view of the world because you know what? You know what? The Rock got huge and he left for Hollywood. But he made the company into a publicly traded company on his way to do it.
Yeah.
Not just him, obviously, but all of these guys. It doesn't matter if they leave, if they can make you better while they're there.
Yeah, no, but Vince is not going to think that way. He wants to win. If he's a guy who tries to win over the stubble over his own face, like Bruce Pritchard said, that's why he shaves all the time. He wants to win the negotiations with his stars.
It must kill him that The Rock is so above him.
Kill them. Kills him.
Yeah.
Kills him. Look at all the things. Like, we're reading these old Wrestling Observer reports from 1996 and all the accusations he's making on Ted Turner is everything that he is. That Ted Turner's he's a billionaire megalomaniac trying to put his competition out of business. Like, literally, those are what he was saying on the road to WrestleMania 12.
Yeah, didn't he accuse him of contract tampering in one of those things?
He did. Yes, he did. He almost got sued for that.
Yeah.
So,
what a loser.
You know,
like, what a loser.
Yeah, he was really a loser. Like, in those months there, he really comes off like a loser.
Yeah.
He really does. But, but that's the whole thing. It's like he has to win, and I think that's what it is. The Rock succeeding kills him. Jericho doing his own thing. That's why he never would push Jericho when he would come back. You know, any WCW guy that he didn't create. He has to bury.
Yeah.
It's the he has to be the dominating force in the world.
Do you think he sets them up so that they'll never go past a certain point?
And that's what I'm saying right now.
That's why they never – that's why they actually never do.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Yeah. I think 2002 was such a burn for him and then again in 2005.
What was the burn in 2002? Rock leaving?
Rock and Austin.
Right, but, you know, Rock was there for most of 2002.
Not for the last 6 months.
Well, he was there till August.
He's basically done right after WrestleMania and the brand split.
Yeah, then he comes back, but he hasn't left yet, right? Like, I agree, he goes away, but he hasn't left yet.
He hasn't left, but he's not there.
Yeah.
And so he comes back basically from July to August.
Right.
That's all he's got.
And has a great run.
great run. But in Vince's, like, Vince is looking at the schedule ahead of time, and we're not. So Vince is looking at that schedule in January of 2002, let's say, when he's building the WrestleMania. He's like, I'm not going to have The Rock past April until the end of the year minus July and August. That's what he's looking at. And then Austin leaves. And that's what Vince deals with on the day-to-day that we don't see. And that, I think, is the major burn at that point.
Yeah, I guess. But it's all a consequence of him being too stubborn to elevate others.
Look, he could have still been saying, oh, great, go have fun. I'm dealing with now the big supercard of WCW versus WWF for SummerSlam 02 or whatever it is.
Yeah, or Rob Van Dam, who was the hottest person in the world in 01.
Yeah. Look, if you do the thing where Triple H chases Austin after WrestleMania X7, does Triple H get injured that night?
Yeah.
Because they're great match, but I'd rather 5 years of great storylines than one good wrestling night, you know?
Of course.
Does he get maybe he's an even bigger star and he's your really a big face where it's like, okay, The Rock's got to go. Good luck. And Austin is giving me problems because Austin would have more problems, yeah. I believe. And so he'd go, all right, so he's not burned as much, yeah, you know?
And it's okay because I have Rob Van Dam. I have Kurt Angle. I have some other people on the shelf that'll work well.
They'll work well, and Triple H is doing great. Triple H has hit that top level now where I don't have to, you know, where he's hit that top level where he is now competing with a Rock and an Austin at that level. It's okay. He's got the strap, and it feels right.
And imagine you keep that, and then you have in 2002 him fighting the NWO.
See, that's what I want to see. So now you have that, and he's going after the NWO.
And then maybe Michaels joins the NWO, and you still get the Michaels stuff, but with the different – like, there's so many.
Yeah, or you start it with DX and the NWO. You start it with Michaels and Triple H against Hall and Nash, main event of SummerSlam 02.
Yeah.
That's you don't need anything else. That's your main event right there.
Right.
What else do you need at that point? You know, returning Michaels with Triple H as DX against the NWO for the very first time? Wow.
Imagine that show being as good as it is, and there's ways to make it better.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you still have your Lesnar and your Rock, and it's just an incredible show. And I think our standards for what wrestling would be completely different today. Yeah. Then you put over Lesnar even bigger because he machine guns through all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a wasted opportunity.
Yeah. And, you know, we're still dealing with the effects, you know, because, you know, that was a huge loss. Just yeah. I love your rebooking of WrestleMania X8. But just to think that we could have had that like for a long time to come because it would have been slower.
Yeah, and it's funny, eh? He never rushed before.
No, he never did rush before, and I wonder what that was about.
I mean, a different world, less paper. Like, you didn't have to be as creative because you only had 4 pay-per-views, or, you know? But then again, even Steve Austin, he didn't rush.
No, he didn't rush.
It's almost 2 years before he crowned him.
It was. It was a long build.
Hmm.
Well, I've got to pee.